All right, we are back after a very long break, very long Christmas break, which actually included another separate trip to Africa. But this podcast episode, we're going to continue talking about Botswana and the Okavango Delta and our trip there back in October. And we left Vumbura Plains, which was the last episode, the last two episodes. We left Vumbura Plains and we went to another new camp. And this one you can really say is a camp, not a lodge. Yeah. We went to a place called Tubu Tree, which for me has been a name that I've known for a very long time. It's a place that I've wanted to go to for a very, very long time. And yeah, we arrived.
Where is it in relation to Vumbura Plains?
Yeah, no, good question. I guess as the crow flies, probably around 100 kilometers west of Vumbura Plains. 60 miles west or so, and you're flying over that really main part of the Okavango Delta into the northwestern part. It's a reserve called the Jau Reserve. Parts of it are already almost in the panhandle, so the kind of the upper part, the northern part of the Okavango Delta. It was a short flight. I think we went directly there, if I'm not mistaken, and it was a lovely flight because like I said, it's over the central part of the delta, so lots of water. And we were able to have a smooth landing, and then we drove into camp, and it was a really quick drive into camp from the airstrip.
It's like 5 minutes. Yeah, it's so close.
Like 5 minutes. But what was your initial sort of reaction of the camp when we got there?
It's so different from Vumbura Plains. Vumbura Plains is right on the water, so you kind of walk into the main area, and you're just above this like river channel in front of the camp. Whereas Tubu Tree, you're kind of, it feels like you're in the treetops. It really, like, it reminded me of, like, Swiss Family Robinson. It felt like a proper bush camp in that way, that you actually feel like you're part of, like, the tree canopy. You're not that high off the ground, but maybe the boardwalk is, I'd say you're at least 10, 15 feet up.
Or what's that Robinson Crusoe, right?
I don't know.
With the Friday, the guy that he's with there. Yeah, it's the same. It's the same sort of island, desert island vibe, isn't it?
And it just, you really feel like you're part of the environment there. So there's trees, the trunk of the trees is coming through, you know, different parts of the main area, and it's just built into like the architecture of the space. And the bar is actually this enormous, this tree that had died, they then like transformed basically into, I think it's called, do you remember what type of tree it was?
No, they cut a section off of it,
though. Yeah, but it's this beautiful, like, large piece of wood that they've turned into the bar. And it itself is built into this tree. So you just feel like you're kind of taking a step back from the kind of more glamorous, luxury lodge environment that we had kind of been in for the last few days and kind of returning back to a more bush vibe.
Oh, it's as bush camp as a bush camp can bush camp. Like,
but it's still like you still have the luxury, and like there's this great pool area, and we spent time there, and
yeah,
the bar is great, and the food is great, and the rooms are beautiful. But you just feel like you kind of exhale there in a different way.
Yeah,
it's not like, oh my god, the beauty. It's just like, oh my god, like nature. You're really immersed. You feel like you're back. Immersed in nature, the way that you feel when you're on drive. But it just was a different kind of experience entering the camp than we had at the other camp so far.
I think also because it's quite forested, this island is quite like dense vegetation and old trees.
There's no Ellie's allowed.
and there's no elephant in the camp. It's an auditory experience. So because your visibility isn't necessarily as far as it is in the other places, you can still look out onto this open plain area, but you know, you're more focused on what's in the forest around you or in the kind of thickets around you. You just hear so much, right?
So to clarify, so the elephants, when I say the elephants aren't allowed, they have an elephant wire around the larger camp area, and that's to protect the trees that are in and around the lodge so that elephants don't push them over to try and feed on them or something. And so what Jomi's saying is totally right, is like, you, because you're in this like little forested environment, we heard so many more birds. I think we'd been keeping a list for our trip of what we were seeing, a bird list, and you got so many new ones there just in the morning. You like went out at like, what time was that? I was down to sleep.
I went out, I mean, I think I think I made the decision to go out while it was almost still dark, because I had the recorder that we record this podcast on. I had that with me, and I just wanted to get some audio of different things. And I think the first thing that I heard was a ground hornbill.
Oh, nice.
Which is this, or several ground hornbills. And they're these very, very big, very primitive looking hornbills that look like toucans, I suppose.
Zazu.
Zazu, yeah, that are walking on the ground with these big red faces, and they make this booming sound. It's a very like, ooh, 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 ooh. Actually, you know what I'll do? That was a Veraz Eagle Owl. But what I'm going to do is I'll play the recording because I'm pretty sure I recorded it.
Yeah.
I had remembered going to bed that first night and hearing first wild dogs, then hyena, then lion in the distance, and then leopard. So kind of all of these really big predators were calling right around the camp, and you know, at different intervals, and from nearby and then from far away. And it was just like a whirlwind of
noises
and audio. And yeah, I mean, that was very, very special.
Yeah, so tell us about the sightings. I can't even remember now. I mean,
yeah. Well, just to put, there's a little bit of a safari lesson for today's podcast as well, because Tuba Tree is a camp that is extremely well renowned by, I guess, in the safari community and industry as being a camp where you see lots and lots of leopards. Well,
where it has very good leopard viewing.
It has very good leopard viewing, exactly. Mm-hmm. It is down to the habitat there. There are lots of these islands with big trees. It is down to the fact that the camp has been there for quite a long time, so the leopards have had the chance to get habituated to people. It is down to the fact that there is a very good guiding team, and the guiding team has put a concerted effort into making sure that leopards have been carefully habituated.
It also might play a role that the lions aren't there all the time.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. The lions don't spend, or there aren't many lions that spend the whole year there.
Yeah, right, not resident.
Yeah, not resident. Oh, we heard one, but we had heard one that was very far away. I mean, probably 5 or 6 kilometers away. So that's not going to deter a leopard from being in an area for sure. So we went to Tuba Tree with this notion of, oh, we're going to go and we're going to try and look for leopards and we're going to try and find leopards. And for sure, I talked to our guide, Steve. We both talked to our guide, Steve, about the leopards there, and he mentioned, you know, Tuba Tree is well known for its leopards, and it's really well known for a leopard that spends time in camp, the camp female.
So interesting.
Yeah, and this female was quite old. She'd had various different litters of cubs, including one litter which the camp manager had actually accidentally found. I think this was during COVID, when the camp was actually still closed, and
it had just closed. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it had just closed, and or it was just about to reopen or something. But anyway, he had gone into the bathroom, the main main area bathroom, and as he went in, he went into the left, and he saw a leopard run out of the bathroom to the right of him. Very lucky, because it's a very small bathroom, so very lucky that the leopard didn't do anything to him. It just shows that a leopard will usually take flight as an option, not fight. But then behind the sink, there's this little area. There were two miniature. Wasn't it two?
Miniature. I thought it was one, but it could be.
Cubs. Maybe it was just the one.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you understand how big this room is, this bathroom, it's tiny, and to see that is really remarkable and special. Mm-hmm. I think the female then, she moved, the camp female, she moved that cub.
She moved it to Little Tubu.
Oh, right. She moved it to Little Tubu, which is the adjacent small camp, and she was busy denning there. And she has raised that cub again successfully.
Yeah.
And how old is that leopard? I think they said that she's 15 years old now. So she's had three or four different litters, and she's still going strong, apparently. The guides speak so fondly of her. I think that she's given them many, many very good sightings over the years.
But it was so interesting learning, from Steve about the different generations of cubs, and which have been successful and not as successful, which have stayed, which have moved, and which are still in the area.
Definitely.
That to me was such a part of the experience at Tuba, was learning the lineage of the leopards.
Yeah.
And I know we talk about this a lot, but it's just such an added awesome part of safari, is learning the social history of the animals in the area.
Yeah, one thing that I must say that became clear to me there is that Steve, the guy there, was very good, again, extremely good and knowledgeable and passionate, very passionate about the leopards especially. But his knowledge of the leopards, not just their lineage, but their territories was really good. Oh my
God. It was insane. Yeah. We would like cross a road and be like, now we're in this one's.
Yeah.
They're like 15 minutes later, now we're in this one's.
Yeah, definitely. And sure enough, he would often be able to point at tracks to us and he'd say, no, that's this leopard and she relates to this leopard this way. And all very interesting again. But in our entire 2 days that we were at Tuba Tree, we did not see a leopard. We came close to seeing a leopard. We tracked a leopard on the last morning for a very long time. And it turned out to be, it was a brilliant experience because, again, we got to learn more about the leopards because of how good Steve's knowledge it was, and he was also very good at tracking. But we didn't find the leopard. We did, however, have 2 days of very good sightings at Tuba Tree.
I mean,
and it started with us going and going out on the first afternoon. It had rained that day, so all the tracks that were fresh were very fresh, and it was very clear to see what had walked over the rain. And it looked
which really, really does help, because when you're going out on drive and you know you see fresh dog tracks and old leopard tracks, you know what you've got a better chance of finding.
Yeah,
you know, so which is exactly what happened in our case.
Yeah, I remember
old
the
leopard tracks and new dog's tracks on top of the rain, and we were like, well, we haven't seen leopard yet, we'd love to, but oh, you can't say no to dogs. Like, they've got to be somewhere. Well, I mean, you think they're somewhere close. Who knows? They could be 15 miles.
Right. So he was like, well, you know what? We're not going to track them. We're just going to drive.
Yeah,
and with them, we're just going to stumble across them, maybe.
Yeah.
And we were driving around and we were doing some birding. We were just, it was our first drive, and Steve was just explaining various different things to us. And then, you know, we stopped. Maybe we didn't stop for a sundowner, but. I think we did stop for a sundowner. We had great sightings of owls, like on the middle, like almost in the middle of the road, I say, like on these dead trees right beside the road. We had a really good sighting of a herd of, I call it a herd. Jeez.
Our first afternoon?
A journey of giraffe, where there was lots of youngsters and they were all running around. Yeah.
Wait, do you mean our first afternoon?
Yes, of course. I mean the first afternoon.
I thought we saw the owl the first morning.
Yeah, maybe. I'm pretty sure we saw one on the first afternoon.
It's just all morphing together.
Yeah, and so as it was getting dark already, Steve was using the torch to shine, the flashlight to shine, and we saw these eyes around this kind of dam area, and I looked through the binos and I saw what I thought was a hyena, and Steve was like, no, are you sure it's not a wild dog? And I looked again and I was like, no, I'm sure it's a hyena. It was just the way it was walking and the eyes were kind of like really far apart. And I was so sure that it was a hyena. And then, no, of course, trust the local guide. Steve's eyes were better than mine, and it was a dog, and not just one. How many were in that pack? It was like
seven is what we saw that night.
Yeah, seven or eight or something. And we had this brilliant sighting in the complete quiet, which was so nice, of these dogs walking right past the car. And you generally, when you're on safari, you don't really follow dogs at night. They're more diurnal animals.
Well, and it was interesting. They were clearly hunting. And it was, at that point, it was dark.
Yeah.
I mean, we were using the spotlight. It was dark. But they were very clearly hunting, so clearly hungry. So we also, knowing that, didn't want to, you don't really want to stay with them with your light while they're trying to hunt if they're clearly hungry and not normally very active during the night.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was just like 5 minutes or so, but really great. And we decided we were going to drive back to camp. Then on the way back to camp, we stopped by this old wildebeest carcass, which we had seen on the way from the airstrip to the lodge earlier, and there were two or three hyenas that were really tucking into it. It wasn't actually an old carcass, it was quite fresh. Wasn't it? And Steve was very good in that he gave them lots of space. We watched them feeding for a short period, but we could see that they were a little bit nervous of the vehicle being there, so we actually left the siding. And again, that just shows the importance of a guide making an ethical or an informed decision to not just stay in a siding or overstay in a siding, but leave a siding at the right time. Because while they looked up at us a few times, and while, you know, one of them, like, it kind of jolted when it saw us at first, they all had come back to the carcass by the time we were pulling out of the siding, and they, you know, were acting very normally and naturally.
Yeah. And then we went back to camp. We sit down for dinner with shout out to the amazing kitchen staff and waiters and waitresses who we had such a blast with.
Yeah.
such an awesome team. And we sit down to have our soup in our in the 95-degree weather that we're in. And we hear this noise in the distance. And we're kind of, we look at each other and we're like, huh. And I was like, what is that? And Jomi says, I think it's the dogs. And we kind of look towards one of the waitresses and we're assuming, you know, they probably hear this a lot. And she was like, it's Jackal. And we were like, oh, huh. And I don't think you were as convinced as I was. I was like, oh, yeah, okay, that kind of makes sense.
No, I wasn't that convinced. It was a bit like it was far away, but I know what a dog sounds like. And it was a contact call of a dog, like a call that one member of the pack makes when it's trying to find another member of the pack. And
which understandably happens a lot because they run so much that they get spread out and they lose each other and need to find each other again.
Yeah, totally. And it kind of started off the evening of audio, and it was just such a nice thing because what happened then was this noise got closer and closer, and it seemed like that the pack was directly in front of the lodge, like in the open area, lodge, the camp in the open area. And then we heard a hyena calling as well. And then it seemed like the dogs were chasing the hyenas around this open area. And it might have even been the same hyenas that were feeding on that wildebeest because it was very, very close by. But we went down to the Boma area, which is just literally a part of this big plain, this big floodplain. And we shone our torches out and we could see the dogs. They weren't far away, 100 meters away or so. And there was also a hyena, and you could see they were having a little bit of a standoff, a little bit of a sort of, you know, one big predator showing another big predator that they're not afraid. And in this situation, I think there were more dogs than hyenas, and the dogs kind of chased the hyenas off, right?
It just was incredible that I think it was Steve that came up. Our guide was about to walk us back to our rooms after dinner. Mm. So he had his torch, his flashlight out, and was kind of shining around and shone onto the dogs and was like, come here, come here, come back. So we just run down from dinner down to the Boma area, which is this kind of lower area in front of the camp. And we're just looking across. We have all the lights are, you know, kind of off and behind us. And we're standing beside the fire down in the Boma looking out across this plain. And there's just like pack of wild dogs running around and jumping around, and they've got their tails up and they're chasing these hyenas, and it's just us. We were the only people in camp this night, and we're just, you're kind of like, where are we? What is happening?
Yeah, we were the only people in camp for both days that we were there, which was really, really special. I mean, it's a little bit sad because we were there at peak, like high season. End of October is a very, very good time of year to go on safari, and there was just no one there, and it is a pity, but just very selfishly while we were there, and it was just the two of us, and the staff was all like fussing over us the whole time. It was lovely, like it was really nice,
great.
Right? But we went out the following day, and we had a big plan that day because we wanted to see, Hadley and I both wanted to see Jao, which is the main camp in the area. It's kind of the main like luxury lodge in the area, and it's quite a drive away. It takes about 2 hours to get there. And I said, yeah, let's do that. But like, I didn't want to miss a drive. I didn't want to miss a safari.
Want to miss specifically a drive at Tubu and in Tubu's area, because to understand the lodge and its area, you need to be on it. And so we didn't want to miss traversing specifically the area around camp.
Yeah, the Hunda Island area. Yeah,
get an idea of what we actually see there.
Yeah, exactly. And so we were driving around and obviously looking for leopard again, but instead of finding leopard, we found the dogs again. And we had such an amazing...
Literally, like, stumbled a possum. One just, like, we're driving through tall grass. We'd just seen this owl. We're driving through tall grass, and one of them just, like, pops out of the tall grass into the road.
Yeah,
and then takes a shit in the middle of the road.
A bunch, a makulu bunch.
And then starts calling and making this call that we'd been hearing the last night when we were having dinner. And sure enough, one by one, the whole rest of the pack comes to this dog and they reunite.
Such good like sightings of them interacting with each other, and really like a very different kind of sighting than what we described at Vumbara with the dogs. You know, it was the Vumbara dogs were on a mission to hunt. These dogs... they were just being active dogs, interacting with each other. Steve had told us that they were likely younger younger dogs pack. That had peeled away from an older pack in the year previously. And it was just great to watch them. You know, they kept losing each other and they kept breaking off into these little splinter groups of like four so and then funny. Three dogs or four and five dogs or whatever. And it was just so cool to watch. I think Steve was really keen to continue and like show us leopard or something, or to find a leopard for us. But we just said, no, you know what? Why don't we just stay with them?
And I think he was like, we should really like start going to Chow, because it's a while. We were like, we don't mind.
Yeah.
We are good to stay. Like, let's hang out.
Yeah.
Watch the dogs. See if they hunt. Keep following. Oh, it was amazing.
Like late October, it gets to over 100 degrees in a day quite easily. And now it was getting warm already. But we
did. It's like 6 a.m.
It gets warm so quickly, doesn't it? But it was... We did spend probably, I would say, an hour to an hour and a half with those dogs,
easily.
With just us, just the two of us and our guide and this pack of dogs. And that was really, really special.
And honestly, we then were like, okay, like it's been an amazing experience with them. Like, we can start heading over to Zhao.
Yeah.
It wasn't even that wasn't a bad option, because that drive, the whole time we were like, oh my God, this area is so beautiful.
Mm.
And we saw buffalo herds, we saw tons of birds. We got lifers on the way over there.
We saw
Rosy-throated
longclaw, a plain-backed pipit as well, which I don't think I'd seen before.
And Slaty.
Yeah, we got a good photo.
Full confirmation proof that was what we had thought we'd been seeing.
Yeah, so that was brilliant. Just lots of good bird life. They were just kind of, it was very, 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 very open.
Mm.
More open even than parts of Bumbura Plains on the drive to Zhao. Areas that you know will flood completely and you wouldn't be able to drive through. But there were parts where there were kind of dips in the road, or where there were like channels that you were crossing where there was still a lot of water. And those channels or those little areas,
little hot spots,
they had so much life. Mm. So many different bird species. I think like 20 to 30 bird, like just water birds in one of these little pans or one of these little channels. And then like Hadley says, buffalo herds, lechwe, a lot of reed buck we saw, which you know, you don't really see that often in other places. We also saw quite a few elephants. I think more elephants the closer we got to Zhao, which is on one of the actual main channels. And great birding on the way, and it was just really, really nice. It was starting to heat up, but we got to Zhao, and I'm going to ask you again what you thought of Zhao, because the camp is special, right?
I mean, wow. The last time I was at Zhao was almost 15 years ago, and it's had a full refurb since then. I mean, basically, it's been completely redone. And it's pretty sensational. I would say, honestly, the rooms are probably the most beautiful, definitely the largest, and probably the most beautiful rooms I've ever seen in a safari lodge.
Yeah.
The interior design is just out of this world. I mean, it's really out of this world. The attention to detail that's gone into the small details in the design is incredible. We were sitting having lunch, and I'm looking at the bar just kind of like in awe of the main area because it's so beautiful. And I'm looking at the bar, and behind the bar there's like this really cool kind of like rope drapery that's happening. The longer I'm looking at it, I'm like, this kind of looks familiar. And I realize that they're actually tow ropes that we use to like tow the cruisers out of mud or sand when you get stuck. And they've so brilliantly like crafted these into the like really beautiful interior design display. So design amazing, the architecture is amazing. What's really something unique about the camp that we loved also is that it has a like cabinet of curiosities room.
Like so a museum of
the curio shop. They've basically turned into a little history museum that has the history of the family that owns the concession that the camp is on, kind of their family throughout the decades in Botswana. And then it has this massive giraffe skeleton and a bunch of little other like fun facts and oddities and curiosities. And it just is really, it's a really unique property now.
And I must say, best gym and best pool that you can possibly imagine, right?
I mean, the pool, just the architecture of the pool is amazing. It's like inside this bird's nest.
Yeah. So unique
dome. And the gym is insane. I mean, there's like ropes, there's boxing things, there's, I don't know, you would remember.
Just better. More the like, yeah, there's great equipment, but it's just more the view for me, really, yeah. That you're just like looking out, and we had lunch then on this quite high up deck where we were overlooking this, like, I mean, it's almost like a lagoon. And this big, big herd of elephant came down to feed and then to drink from this lagoon. And it was just so, so nice. And the food was amazing as well. And then we went and did a little like tour of the lodge, a little site inspection of the rooms and stuff. And we were just blown away by it. And what a way to spend the day. We then drove back with Steve. And for sure, we were driving back a little bit quicker because it was already getting later and it was quite hot. But it was just a nice drive back as well. I just remember we saw quite a lot of stuff, and we had that sighting also of the like eight or nine hyenas that were kind of around.
Yeah, at least.
They were feeding on this buffalo leg, one of them had this buffalo leg in its mouth and ran off with it. And it was just, there was just so much to choose from.
So much life everywhere.
Yeah, much life everywhere. And what I liked is that then went back to, after being in this very fancy lodge, we went back to this bush camp, this tuba tree bush camp, which is also lovely, obviously, but not as lavish, let's say.
Just a totally different vibe.
Yeah.
Equally amazing and fantastic and brilliant, but totally different vibe.
Yeah, exactly. And then we went on another afternoon game drive, and I'm sure we saw lots of lovely, great stuff as well, but we got back from the evening game drive and we had a boma dinner, which had just been done for us. And a boma dinner is sort of like a kind of an African barbecue where it's, you know, slightly more traditional foods, and most things cooked on fire. And the team was just so happy that they were able to serve just their only two guests this food. And it was just... Well,
and it must be said, boma is pretty meat-centric. It's, you know, different... like venison meats and game meats that they serve, and different preparations of which. So I'm vegetarian, don't eat meat or fish. For them, I'm like kind of the chef's worst nightmare on boma dinner. And they were so sweet. They were so excited. They had like made me garlic bread and zucchini like skewers and corn, like so many different things.
Skewers,
and
yeah.
They were so, he was so excited. He'd made me like this great little potato dish on the braai. And it just was like little things like that that made such a difference. And it was such a pleasure sitting there. And we'd also spent like 2 hours in the pool that afternoon when we got back from Jiao because we were so warm.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was so nice to just sit by the pool and look out over the plain.
And drink a brandy and Coke in the early afternoon.
Yeah, ready for game drive.
Nothing like it, hey? But then we had our second night there, and then we had another game drive on the last morning. And I remember that being a much quieter game drive. That was the drive where we were tracking this leopard or various leopards, because I think we understood through the tracks that it had been a male and a female that had possibly been mating. And I'm sure we either drove past them
100%.
Or we were very close to them. We didn't find them, and that's fine, totally fine. That is the nature of safari. That is kind of the lesson that I suppose that I wanted to share, or the lesson that I still keep relearning is, you know, you go to a lodge, you go to an area and you hear it's really good for a specific animal, but then you focus too much on finding that specific animal.
Who reminds you about that lesson?
Hadley reminds me of that lesson all the time, but more so because she's like, really? You see leopards here? I don't think so.
No, I always say, like, Jomi was so excited to go to Tubu Tree, and I was kind of like, yeah, I mean, I'm so excited to go to all of the lodges, but why? He's like, it's just so good for leopard. And I was like, careful what you say. We don't do that. You don't put expectation like that. And it's so hard to, because, you know, you see great sightings coming out of, you know, certain camps that do get a lot of, you know, one predator or, you know, one pack of wild dog that's being seen over and over and over again. But the bush works in mysterious ways, and animals move. And if you are there on the wrong 2 days, there's absolutely a chance that you don't see them.
Right, and I would say that if you focus on one thing, you'll almost certainly still see something else that's really good, and you shouldn't just focus on the one thing in case you do miss the other thing that's happening.
Yeah, I mean, we always say, like, the bush rewards the patient. If you're patient and you're just happy to be there to see what you see, you will see amazing things.
Yeah.
When you start saying, I want to see this, and that becomes your one focus, you miss so much more because you've kind of blinded yourself or pigeonholed yourself with this one goal.
Yeah.
But when you're just happy to see that, be there and see what you see, my God, you see so much.
Yeah. But on that note, that was our experience at Tuba Tree. We absolutely loved it as a camp. I mean, I would love to go back there with friends, especially. Yeah. I'd love to visit that lodge or camp with friends and just have a relaxing few days in just pure blissful bush.
Yeah.
The next episode is a very, very special one. It's going to be the last one that we record about the Delta in this series.
I think we both cry in it.
Possibly. It is very leopard-centric. It's all about just one sighting, and we can't wait to share it with you.
I don't even think it's one sighting, but it's definitely about one cat that we spent...
Oh, yes. It's about one cat, and I'm not gonna say anymore. But we hope that you tune in.
Listen.
We hope that you tune in again and listen to the next week's episode too, or next week whenever we're moving to Denver soon. So whenever we're in Denver, we'll probably release that episode
in an upcoming Friday.
In an upcoming Friday.
On an upcoming Friday.
Yeah. All right. Bye. Thanks for listening, guys. If you want to see some of the photos and videos that accompany the stories that we've been talking about in the podcast, make sure to follow us on Instagram at Trunks and Tracks, or subscribe to our mailing list on our website, which is just www.trunksandtracks.com. And when you subscribe, you'll get emails which have the full variety of content, including blogs and videos that accompany the podcast.